nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, a very pleasant good morning to you. Hi there, this is Patrick Timpone, and this is OneRadioNetwork.com. I could use a little more light here. We use a lot of natural sunlight for our camera, but we have an overcast day here in Dripping Springs, Texas, about an hour outside of Austin. Oops, and the replay button is on. It's not a replay button. We are live here this morning. It is 13 April 2021. In a couple of hours, we're going to hear from Rosemary Friel. She's a great researcher, and we'll have a lot of things to talk about, including a big deal was made about a alleged anti-vaxxer vaccine maker, Gert somebody, you know, Professor Gert, who Del Bigtree made a huge deal about, and she and other people think that that was a controlled opposition thing just to get more vaccines. And we're going to talk about that and some other things with her. She's quite an interesting researcher. So get your notepad, because you'll have some stories to tell your grandchildren if we make it out of this live, which we're going to try to. So that'll be in a couple of hours. We are going to try to make it out alive because, as you saw on the slide here, Dr. Stephanie Seneff is with us. She's from with NIT, MIT, or N. No, it's an M. She's a senior research scientist at MIT, Computer Science Artificial Intelligence Laboratory. She's in Cambridge, Mass., and she has a bachelor's degree in MIT in biology, master's and engineer's degree, a PhD, all from MIT, electrical engineering and computer science. A recent interest have focused on toxic chemicals, micronutrient deficiencies in health and disease. And there's been a special emphasis in her life, as you know, you've probably heard her on our show from time to time, of this thing called glyphosates, also known, Roundup, I guess, is a big one. Dr. Seneff, good morning. It's a pleasure to have you here. Thanks for coming on the show.
So great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. Now, this is going to be the dumb question of the day, and I always hate when people ask it, but I think it's appropriate here because this glyphosate thing has been around for a while, and I'm curious, with all of your background and all this biology and artificial intelligence, how you came across the idea that the weed killer glyphosate was destroying our health and our environment, the title of your book. I mean, what's up with that? A little birdie told you something one day in MIT? What happened?
Kind of. It's an interesting story. I got interested in autism actually way back when one of my dear friends, her son was got a vaccine, a DPT shot, and he ran a high fever and piercing cry, and then a week later he had seizures, and then he was later diagnosed with severe autism. And so it was back in the early 1980s. So ever since then, I've been watching autism, and I saw the rates going up in the 2000s. They were going up dramatically, and I was really getting worried because they kept saying, and we're just diagnosing it more, but I didn't believe that. Mm-hmm. I wanted to figure out what it was in the environment. I figured it had to be something in the environment that was causing autism. And I did look at the vaccines. I started looking around 2007, 2008 timeframe.
Wow.
And it took me until 2012 until I discovered glyphosate. It was quite serendipitous because I happened to be at a conference where a professor, Don Huber, was speaking about glyphosate, 2-hour presentation. I didn't know what glyphosate was at that time, which is, I'm embarrassed to admit, I didn't know what it was. But, you know, toxic chemical, I thought, this looks interesting, I should check it out. And by the end of the 2 hours, I was convinced I had found my answer. It was that clear, because I really had characterized autism. I understood all this, you know, complicated comorbidities that go along with autism, and that it was, you know, a lot of gut, a lot of gut problems with autism. And
right.
He talked about how glyphosate would disrupt the gut microbiome, deplete minerals. You know, glyphosate binds very tightly to various minerals and keeps them from being available to the gut microbes and also to the host. So you end up with mineral deficiencies. You actually end up with simultaneous mineral deficiencies and mineral toxicities, I believe.
So these minerals in the gut, Huber taught you, and then you've been researching since, 2012 that when
2012
I'm sorry.
Yeah, 2012.
Yeah, 2012.
Right.
So, Richard Olry and other people have told us, and you have mentioned the sulfur over the years, that when these minerals are depleted through this chemical glyphosate Roundup, the main player, these minerals are needed, Dr. Seneff, for the whole gut microbiome thing to work properly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you really think
that's
is
right.
going on, why glyphosate is such an issue. One of the main reasons.
It's just one part
just
of it.
Just one of it.
There's a lot of parts to glyphosate. It turns out to be a very interesting and complicated chemical with
wow.
many effects. I'm still discovering new effects of glyphosate even now, and I've been studying it intensely for 8 years, maybe 9 years. So
wow. You've been studying for 9 years, and you keep finding new things that it's impacting our bodies, glyphosates?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I still don't totally understand this chemical.
Wow. How about you think, I don't want to go there right now. So tell us some of the other things that it's doing other than disrupting the minerals in the gut, causing, and then that's where you made your connection in that we have also talked to many people, Kerry Rivera and all kinds of people over the years, that the gut is a real player in the autistic syndrome, correct?
Right, it's central. I think it's central to autism. And I'm, the gut is a really complicated organ system.
Sure.
And I've been reading, and there's lots of papers coming out. Actually, it's interesting to look at the number of papers that have been published in PubMed over time on the gut microbiome. And it's just been going up incredibly fast, exponentially, in the past decade or two. There's just huge numbers of papers coming out, and they do really sophisticated analysis with information overload. When you see these papers, it's just all these lists of these microbes and these pie charts, and you just get completely overwhelmed. So it's hard to dig the story out. That was actually the most difficult chapter in my book. I wrote a chapter in the book on the gut.
On the gut.
Gut microbiome and the gut, and all the different mechanisms in the gut that get disrupted. It's really many, many things, including, of course, the microbes. The beneficial bacteria are preferentially killed. So they get hit harder than the pathogens. And this allows the pathogens to overgrow. And then that gets you an immune response, which is an inflammatory gut. And glyphosate also gives you a leaky gut. That's been shown experimentally in published papers that glyphosate causes a leaky gut. It disrupts your ability to break down proteins in particular. And that's partly because it kills lactobacillus, which are... these are organisms that know how to help you break down difficult proteins like gluten and casein. Casein is in milk. So we have an epidemic in casein intolerance, milk, dairy sensitivity, and an epidemic in gluten intolerance, which is the wheat problem. We have all these gluten-free sections in the grocery store right now because so many people can't eat wheat. Glyphosate's the main player in that. It's not that gluten intolerance didn't exist before glyphosate, but the epidemic is due to glyphosate. I feel very confident
and
about
so,
that.
Because it's the lactobacillus that especially for these gluten kind of proteins that gets wiped out with the glyphosate.
Yeah, and of course, the milk, so the kids can't digest milk, and then they put them on soy protein formula, and that's got lots of glyphosate in it, so
right.
that just takes them down even further. It's just a downward cascade from that point.
So when we talk about the gut microbiome, is it just, explain to us, talk to us like we're a young child or a golden retriever. That's the way we like to do it around here so we can understand. Is it just a bunch of microbes hanging out everywhere in our mouth all the way, maybe to our bum, right? Just
right, out of the way, yes.
Getting along, trying to get along to make things happy so everything works? I mean, I know that's a dumb way to
yes.
say it, but...
No, that's true, though. They are, it's a symbiotic relationship that we have with our gut microbiome, and they play many, many essential roles in keeping us healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, the actual enzyme that glyphosate famously suppresses, this enzyme called EPSP synthase, which is in this pathway called the shikimate pathway.
Whoa.
And Monsanto proudly says that human cells don't have that enzyme. They don't have that pathway. So glyphosate doesn't harm us at all. This is the argument that they use. It's a nice story, but it's not true.
So we have a thing called EPS 5, did you say?
EPSP synthase.
EPSC synthase is something, the chicamate pathway thing, and it destroys this. And what happens when it destroys this in our body?
Yeah, so the microbes actually produce, through that pathway, they produce the three aromatic amino acids, tryptophan, tyrosine, and phenylalanine, three amino acids. So those are three of the coding amino acids that go into all the proteins. Wow. There's about 20 of them. So that's a significant contribution. Those three, we get them in our diet, but we also depend on our gut microbes. Of course, if you're getting them from plants that are being exposed to glyphosate, they're going to have suppressed levels as well. So your food and your food is deficient and your microbes aren't able to make these critical molecules for the host. They go into the proteins, which are the workhorses of the body. And so you have deficiencies in those amino acids. They're not only going into the proteins, but they're also precursors to a number of really, really important biologically active molecules. This is like all the hormones, the serotonin, melatonin. You've probably heard of these.
So all of these things are made in the gut.
From that pathway, yeah. Well, it starts the precursor. So that's the molecules that can later become these other molecules through enzymatic action. The tryptophan, tyrosine, and phenylalanine, they get turned into these other really critical hormones like serotonin, melatonin, dopamine, thyroid hormone. We have a lot of issues with thyroid, and I think glyphosate's a major player there as well.
Wow. And it's called SP?
EPSP. EPSP.
Oh, let me do it. I'm going to write it down. EPSP. And so Monsanto claims that...
I was making up a mnemonic for it.
What was the mnemonic you made for it?
Extra perfect special protein.
Oh, I like it though. It'll help us to remember it. An extra special.
Exceptionally perfect.
Extra perfect special protein. And Monsanto's claim all these years have been that this glyphosate does not affect the EPSP like it does in plants. That's what they.
Well, it's saying that we don't have that.
Oh,
enzyme,
we don't have that enzyme.
Our cells don't have that enzyme, so we're safe. But our gut microbes have the enzyme, use the enzyme to make these critical products for the host. And when they can't make that enzyme work, they get sick as well. So we lose the microbes, we lose the enzymes, we lose the results of the pathways that the microbes would have done for us. We lose all of that, and then we get sick because of all those consequences. So it's not directly; it's indirectly through the microbes in our gut.
We talk with Dr. Stephanie Seneff, MIT. Her new book, let me show you the cover here a little bit, and just so you can pre-order this puppy now. Now, this is going to be really good for you all to get, because you're going to learn about the gut microbiome, and you're going to really understand more about GMOs, that we like to call them around here, which most of them have, glyphos. And then once you better understand it, you're just going to say, well, you know, I'm going to buy the organic because, you know, poo. It's called Toxic Legacy, How the Weed Killer Glyphosate is Destroying Our Health and Our Environment, Dr. Stephanie Seneff. And we're live here, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com, April 13th. If you have a question for the good doctor, you can call our 800 number. It is working again. Magic, it just came on. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Hold on a second. Somebody says, okay, got it. Okay. So, is Roundup, Doc, the only place where this glyphosate thing is used?
No, there's actually many, many different formulations, at least 20, maybe even more than that. Lots of different formulations of glyphosate with different other things added to it, which actually make the formulation much more toxic than the glyphosate by itself. They've learned how to add things to the glyphosate to make it more water-soluble, to make it more easily be taken up by the plant. And then those things are in and of themselves are also toxic. There's papers that have been written that show that some of the other things in formulations like Roundup are actually 1,000 times more acutely toxic than glyphosate itself. And what that means is the, you know, it kills you fast. It hurts your cells immediately after you're exposed. The trouble with glyphosate, in my opinion, is that it's subtle. It doesn't immediately kill you, but it goes into your body, throughout your body, and goes into your proteins, is what I'm claiming in my book. It gets incorporated into your proteins and it messes them up. And this happens slowly over time. So as you are get exposed to more and more glyphosate, you accumulate more and more in your tissues over time. And eventually something's got to give. And so you end up with a lot of problems. For example, collagen. Collagen is the most common protein in the body. 25% of the body's protein is collagen. Collagen has a long, long sequence of a pattern of the amino acid chain. Amino acids are assembled like beads on a string, according to the DNA code in biology. People should know that. But the collagen has this long sequence with a pattern, GXY, 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 where every third amino acid is a glycine. And so there's tons of opportunity for glyphosate to substitute for glycine in the protein. That's what I'm claiming it does.
It goes in there, and the body gets confused and lets it in because it thinks it's just some other glycine.
It looks like glycine because it is a glycine molecule. It's a complete glycine molecule, except that it's got some extra stuff hanging off of its nitrogen atom, which makes a big difference because it behaves very differently biochemically and biophysically.
When you say it's into the proteins, where are these proteins in our, where are they?
They're everywhere. You know, so the DNA code, you know, the famous DNA code in the chromosomes, is a four-letter code, and it's made up of nucleotides, and they line up like beads on a string. And then the DNA code, you can read it off, three letters. Each three-letter unit codes for a particular amino acid. And so, for example, if you see GG, and then it can be any of the four, the third element. So if the first two are G, which is guanine, in the code, then it'll be coding for glycine. And then there's other codes for other amino acids. So it's all worked out. It's an elegant system. It's really like a language.
You think?
Yeah. And it tells you which amino acid to put next.
God's pretty elegant, you know. But, you know, this is really an interesting argument, just big picture, you know, understanding this whole microbiome, going back to that for a minute, and the gut, and how that's just big. That's everything, right? Just, you were talking about tyrosine and hormones to sleep and everything. Isn't this also a big argument for not trying to kill anything on our body? I mean, I'm talking about colloidal silver or hydrogen peroxide. You know, I'm starting to think, man, I don't even be killing anything because I don't know what I'm doing, right? Even all these so-called natural things, colloidal silver, hydrogen peroxide, even, I don't know, maybe even anti-parasite stuff. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Well, and then, of course, antibiotics would be the ultimate, right? The ultimate carpet bomb.
Killing, right? Exactly. Killing off the microbiome doesn't seem like a good idea. And yet we're handing out antibiotics like they're candy.
It's like, yeah. Do you all have any idea, looking at these things, what one simple course of antibiotics does to the microbiome?
Well, I know that sometimes it just totally wrecks it, and people can get really in big trouble with their microbiome
after taking
antibiotics.
One course,
yes. You've probably learned about the fluoroquinolones, right?
No.
Cipro?
Yeah, I've heard about Cipro, yeah.
Yeah, there's a very strange thing that is happening after fluoroquinolones. I studied it for a while because I really wanted to figure it out. It's bizarre because you can take one course of Cipro and you can be in trouble. And then like 4 or 5 months later, you start to get in trouble.
Wow.
You get chronic fatigue and brain fog. I mean, it can last for a long time and even possibly for the rest of your life from one course.
Do we think that some really good probies can help or rebuild? Or does the body rebuild with food? Do we know?
No, I guess we don't know. And there are a lot of probiotics that are being offered on the market. And
sure.
I don't know to what extent they're working. I prefer to do natural probiotics. So I actually do recommend eating sauerkraut, apple cider vinegar, cheese, you know, all these fermented foods. I think they're very healthy for you. And they're also a good source of vitamin K2, which is a very important vitamin that also is associated with COVID-19. So deficiencies in various vitamins are associated with increased risk to bad outcomes with COVID-19, vitamin D in particular, but also vitamin K2,
so
vitamin C.
If we make our own yogurt, sauerkraut or yogurt, you could get raw milk and just leave it on the counter and it makes stuff, right? It makes babies.
Right, that's true.
Do we know, does it have a lot of the good stuff, the lactose and all the things we need? Do we know?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, it's basically the microbes are going to turn the milk into something different, right?
Right.
And they make a lot of lactate is one of the things that they make by fermenting the foods.
Yes, sir. Yes,
and,
ma'am.
And lactate is actually, I think, a very healthy food by itself, lactate, which is what comes in when you expose the milk to the fermenting microbes. When you just let it spoil on your counter, it's getting whatever microbes happen to be in your room, yeah. And it's probably
a lot
your
of people
guess
do that.
As good as mine.
Yeah, a lot
yeah,
of people.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting that that works, and you never quite know what you've got, right? Because it's so complicated. That's the thing I was realizing, trying to look at papers that show the distribution of the microbes in the gut with autism, you know, association with autism versus not, and looking at all the different variables and trying to figure out what's different. It's just so complicated. It's not an easy story, but there are some trends that I picked up on after reading enough of these papers that's quite interesting. And it really has to do with the lack of breakdown of the proteins, which I mentioned before, because your microbes that help you break them down aren't working. So you get these long sequences of peptides that are fragments of the gluten, for example, from the wheat that don't get broken down. And then you get a leaky gut because glyphosate causes a leaky gut. Those proteins get out into your circulation and your immune cells get upset when they see them. They're foreign proteins that it doesn't want to be there. And they react and produce antibodies to those proteins. And then those antibodies start attacking your own tissues through a mechanism called molecular mimicry, where the sequence from the peptide that didn't get broken down resembles another sequence in one of your own proteins, a human protein. And that protein is often very important one that your body starts attacking with those antibodies. So it's very dangerous to have fragments of proteins that didn't get broken down in the gut. It causes your body to be very upset, and immune cells in particular start attacking your tissues. And that's how you get a whole bunch of different autoimmune diseases. And I think there's an autoimmune component to autism that's related to that, but multiple sclerosis and rheumatoid arthritis and Hashimoto's thyroid syndrome. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of Sjogren's, there's a lot of different autoimmune
diseases. Because these proteins are strange to the body, and the body gets confused and does things they
should. Yeah, the body reacts to the protein. It's very dangerous to have antibodies, actually. And this is one of the things that annoys me about the vaccines, because the vaccines want you to make antibodies. That's their goal. And they go out of their way to make sure that you make antibodies. Antibodies are always a risk for autoimmune disease.
Okay, we're going to take a little break, and I want you to explain that to us. Okay, and we're going to ask you about conventional oranges, so you can study up on that while we're doing this. This is Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. I tell you what, it's a jungle out there, and I'm with Stephanie Seneff, and I do these probiotics that Wayne Blakely's made, these Living Streams, and I like them. Of course, I eat totally organic, just totally organic. But I do them, and, I do really well. I think that she's on track to also, add in some yogurt and some kefir and some a sauerkraut and things like that, just to make sure. But we think that these are one of the best probies that I know of. Wayne Blakely was a real master at it. It was funny that it's curious. Wayne began his study with these about 20 years ago when his child had autistic symptoms. That's right. His child had autistic symptom, whatever you want to call it. And that's what he came to the conclusion after looking at it for 20 years, that it too was the gut. And that's why he created these probiotics. And there you go. It's multi-blend is the number one guy. That's got lots of the lactobacillus stuff in there that Stephanie talked about. We don't make any claims here, but, use as thy will. And for a few bucks, it's worth a shot. And we think that there's some good things going on with Living Streams. But do what you think is right here. And if you want some, do you know some Elks? You know,
starving for vitality.
Elks?
We're turning to energy drinks, those stimulants, and pharmaceuticals to try to improve our focus, increase our metabolism, rescue our sex drive, and adapt to the stresses of modern day living. Each year, an elk sheds its impressive antlers, regenerating an even larger set the following year. These velvet antlers have been a revered traditional medicine for thousands of years. Elk antler harnesses the adaptogenic and highly regenerative growth factors from this natural and ethical resource into a concentrated, bioavailable extraction. Its revitalizing effects span bone, muscle, and nerve support, improve metabolism, cellular repair, sexual potency, anti-inflammation, vascular strengthening, and hormone production. Humanely harvested from free-range U.S. elk, extracted in organic alcohol, and protected in Miron glass, our elk antler is available in three strengths to restore your vitality at any level.
Well, if I could get my mouse to work, boy, there's nothing. So I asked my geek, I said, how come my little Wi-Fi mouse doesn't work? He said, you better get one. Can't even do this thing. I just got to get a wired one here. But don't bother with me. Anyway, this is a great product, Elk Velvet. And there's a 10% off on all Survival products right now. Use promo code ONERADIO. For just a couple more days. So if you'd like to try some elk velvet antler, some pine pollen, some of the, speaking of digestion, he has a great product called Digestive Bitters. Spray that baby in Europe. They all they've used Digestive Bitters for a long time. All these wonderful herbs that help the gut, eat up, when you go to Burger Doodle, don't go there. Anyway, 10% promo code ONERADIO on OneRadioNetwork.com. If you like a way to soothe your gut, if you're having irritable bowel things, just not happy down there, burning, these kinds of things, we have a great company, Stockton Aloe 1. It is fresh, frozen aloe, nothing in there, nada, zero zip, except the fillet of the aloe plant, and you can go on our website and order up. I think the minimum is 2 half-gallons. Get yourself a couple of those. You just thaw it out, drink it, and you could do that probably every day for the rest of your life, and you're going to be a happier person for it. It's a wonderful healing product, especially healing for those who have created some irritable bowel stuff, Crohn's stuff, and constipation and things like that, which all, in our opinion, are all start at the spiritual, mental, emotional level. And boy, you just worry and stuff, and your gut will just tighten up. And, that's what's going on in planet Earth today, everybody in fear. So this Stockton Aloe 1 is a great product. So check it out on our website, these three products.
We are listener-supported, One Radio Network.
Dr. Stephanie Seneff is with us. Her book is called Toxic Legacy, How the Weed Killer Glyphosate is Destroying Our Health and the Environment. You can pre-order this little puppy right now, and it's going to come out in a few days, right? In a couple weeks, pre-order it. Anywhere, right? Anywhere?
It's in many different booksellers, and it's July 1st is when it's...
Oh, July 1st. Okay. But just order it now. So then you're going to have it, and you're just going to forget, right? You're just not going to forget. Here's one that I wanted to ask, because I do this every now and then. Does Dr. Seneff know if conventional oranges may have glyphosate, because I like to get orange juice, but it's not organic?
I think it probably does.
Tell me that. No, I don't want to talk to you anymore.
I think it does.
Really, do you think it does? Why would they spray it on oranges?
That seems weird, doesn't it? And I don't, I'm not a farmer, and I don't know for sure, but I do know that they've been having trouble in Florida with a blight on the oranges. The orange bushes are, bushes? Orange trees.
Trees.
Is that right?
Yeah, they're trees. They're trees. That's right.
Orange trees are suffering from a serious blight that's, I think, a fungus infection or something like that. And actually, Don Huber, who's the guy who gave that two-hour presentation I mentioned earlier, he's done research with people in Florida who have really figured out that if you get rid of the glyphosate, so it's pretty clear they're using glyphosate on the oranges, because when they got rid of the glyphosate and switched to organic oranges, the problem went away. So it was a way to fix the problem, was to get rid of the glyphosate.
So much, totally connected. So much for me buying pre-squeezed orange juice if it's not organic. I'm over that now.
Exactly.
I thought about that this morning. It was like drinking some. I said, I wonder if this got glyphosate.
It's surprising, isn't it? And I actually didn't think fruits would have glyphosate in them. And apparently they use them around the strawberry. Of course, around the grapes, you know, the wines
are
all testing positive.
Are they?
And they're just using it to get rid of weeds around the tree. It seems so weird to me. You know, they want to make the tree get all the nutrition, so they kill the weeds, so they are not going to steal nutrition from the tree. But they're actually poisoning the tree so that it can't get the nutrition it needs because of the glyphosate. So it's really...
So what you're saying is your research shows that if you have a tree, an orange tree, and you're spraying the weeds around the tree, it's got to, right? It goes down in the roots. It's got to get
up. Goes down the roots, take it up,
it's
and then the
tree
gets sick. Yes.
Wow.
It's really sad. And of course, there's, you know, wheat and barley and oats and chickpeas and garbanzo beans. Those are the foods that are coming up with the highest levels. The products of those plants are coming up with the highest levels of glyphosate contamination. And they're non-GMO. They're all non-GMO. So non-GMO is not enough to get rid of
glyphosate. Wait a minute. I thought non-GMO meant that it didn't have glyphosates, not?
No, that's a mistake that a lot of people make.
Well, I'm one of those. What happened? What did I miss the boat on that one? Really, what does non-GMO mean?
Yeah, so the GMO is the most popular GMO is the one that causes the plant to be insensitive to glyphosate. And that actually it works by getting rid of a glycine residue at the place where glyphosate messes things up. They found out that if you replace that glycine with alanine by the code, you change the code, then that enzyme, EPSP synthase, is completely insensitive to glyphosate. This is the big cue to me that glyphosate works by substituting for that glycine inside the protein.
Yes,
that's
right.
How it messes
that's
up.
That's how it does it.
And that's crucial. That's a central piece of my story in my book, because that leads to the idea that it could be doing the same thing to other proteins, which is what I think is happening. And there's several other proteins that glyphosate suppresses that also have very critical glycine residues that could be disturbed by glyphosate.
But you're saying if a product says non-GMO, that doesn't mean it doesn't have glyphosates.
Right. Well, of course, those oranges, you know, they're spraying it around the weeds around the oranges and it's going into the tree. But worse than that is these ones that I mentioned, because those are crops that are sprayed with glyphosate intentionally right before the harvest in order to kill the plant. They actually want to kill the plant.
Right.
They're increasing the rate at which it goes to seed. They're synchronizing the harvest so that, like the wheat plant, they'll get a higher yield if they get all the wheat to go to seed at the same time and then they harvest it. So they want to, so they spray it with glyphosate just a few days before they harvest it. And the glyphosate goes to the seeds. And then those seeds become bread, and that bread has high levels of glyphosate in it. So it's oats and wheat and barley, and that means beer, of course. Barley is beer.
But that doesn't mean you could label it non-GMO, right?
You can label it non-GMO because it's not a GMO crop. It doesn't have that GMO gene that makes it insensitive. It's actually sensitive to glyphosate.
Okay, I'm confused. Okay, let's go back. What does GMO mean? What is the definition of non-GMO mean in your research?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay,
what
that's
does that
a
mean?
Good question to ask. I guess people are probably confused on
sure,
it. Doesn't
I am.
Mean it doesn't, they don't use chemicals. It means that they haven't modified the plant by inserting some kind of a foreign gene into its genome. So, for example, with the glyphosate, they found a bacterium that was resistant to glyphosate. And that bacteria, so they actually got the EPSP synthase enzyme, the version of that enzyme that bacteria produces. And then they took that enzyme and stuck it into the genome of the plant. They do this incredible technology. I mean, it's quite amazing what they can do. You have to, hats off, you know, to their ability to do these bizarre things playing with life. I find it, you know, very, makes me very anxious to think about the consequences of these things.
Duh.
But they, so they take this gene that they got out of a bacterium that makes an EPSP synthase that is not sensitive to glyphosate because it's missing that glycine, that critical glycine that's getting disturbed, missing that unit. So they put that into the plant, and then the plant can actually use that bacterial gene to make a functioning version of EPSP synthase that can do all the things it's supposed to do. So then that plant doesn't get hurt by glyphosate. It has this special enzyme that can fix the problem. And the GMO then is the technology that actually modifies the plant and puts this bacterial gene into it. A plant that doesn't have that bacterial gene is going to be sensitive to glyphosate, but the ones that they're spraying it with right before the harvest, they want them to be sensitive. They want them to respond to the glyphosate by dawn,
so
which they do.
To be clear, non-GMO doesn't mean anything except... So without glyphosate, what do GMO foods do without glyphosate?
Well, there are other kinds of GMOs that involve inserting a gene, again, from a bacteria.
What does that do to our body?
That produces a toxin. So that one's an interesting one, too. The other dominant GMO is this BT gene, Bacillus
tetragenesis,
which stands for bacteria.
Yeah.
You know that one, thermogenesis.
Well, but I thought that was an organic gardener's tool, Bacillus.
Right. I mean, that's a natural toxin. So it's a natural product, the toxin. But what they do is they put the gene that makes the toxin into the plant.
Oh.
So the plant can make the toxin all by itself. It doesn't need the gene. It doesn't need the bacterium to make the toxin.
I see.
It can just use its own genome to make the toxin. So the plant produces this toxin that causes the insects to die. It blows up their stomachs. And then they assure us that, you know, it doesn't do the same thing to us, but how do we know? And also the bacteria can share genes. So it's possible that when you eat these products that have this BT gene in them, that gene could actually end up in the bacteria in your gut. So you could end up with bacteria in your gut that can produce this BT toxin, you know, indefinitely in the future. We don't know. I mean, that's, you know,
I don't think
the research is properly done, but it's theoretically possible because bacteria are really good at sharing genes.
Hmm.
And this is a gene that's available in the plant, you know, so when you eat the plant, you're getting that DNA that has that code in it.
So the bottom line is here before we move on, non-GMO means nothing really to us who are interested in our health. It doesn't mean anything.
Well, it means something because it means the plant hasn't been manipulated to have
But if it's got glyphos, I mean, what's the point?
Well, that's what I think. I think the glyphosate is far more serious. And the highest levels of glyphosate are in the plants that are non-GMO. You can really get fooled buying a non-GMO
Hold on. You move a little fast for me here. Yeah, you know, I'm Italian. I'm not that smart, you know. So non-GMO plants are the ones that use the most glyphosate?
They often have the highest levels. So the foods that are derived from the non-GMO plants often have higher levels of glyphosate than the foods that are derived from the GMO plants.
Which is counterintuitive. Yeah, such as?
Well, such as oats, barley, wheat, legumes. So chickpeas, lentils, and garbanzo beans. All of those have really high levels of glyphosate if they've been treated right before the harvest.
So you go to the hippie food store, you think you're doing good. They don't have GMO wheat, or they don't have organic this or that, you know, like legumes, but they have non-GMO legume. You say, well, this will be good, right? It's not organic, but it's not good. It's got the highest level of glyphosate. You don't work for the organic. You don't work for the Organic Association of America, do you? Just kidding.
I know. I really should.
You should. You should work for them. I'm going to email Don Huber and see if he's got some, you know. I still want to use it. It's not organic orange juice, but I'm just going to squeeze my own. You know, I can do that, you know, because you can actually get organic oranges, right? You know, you can actually get those. It's Dr. Stephanie.
You can get organic orange juice as well.
Really?
I bought it.
Really?
Yes. Where? I forget what like Whole Foods, they have it.
No, I went a couple of weeks ago, man. There was no organic OJ. Oh, you know, there was, but there was pasteurized.
Ah, yes, you want fresh squeeze.
I want fresh squoze. Yeah, I'm a purist.
Well, I do too. And I'm pretty sure we have found that, although we do squeeze our own, we actually make our own grapefruit juice.
I'm going to just get one of those. They probably got something you can really, they probably got a little machine you can make a lot of orange juice, right? I'll look at that and probably buy one of those. Let's take a few emails. This is crazy, man. This is worse than I thought. It's all your fault, Doc. It's all your fault. here's an email for you, Dr. Seneff. Do plumbers and boilermakers still use glyphosate? They once used it extensively. Are large residues of glyphosate still in our reservoirs and water supplies?
Are they talking about using glyphosate to clean pipes or to clean water?
Not sure. They don't say.
That's really scary. I read that the original patent for glyphosate was based on its ability to clean pipes, to clean metal surfaces. And that I think it had been used, they were using it, I think, to clean water heaters, you know, those tanks that hold the hot water.
Right.
To clean those, which would be horrible because that would, of course, end up in the water supply. And I don't know how far they got with that because I haven't really seen a lot of literature on it. But that was the original patent. They didn't know that it could kill plants. They just thought it was really good at stripping metals off the pipes. I actually think that may relate to the problems in Flint, Michigan. I know you probably heard about the lead problems in Flint, Michigan.
Sure.
My suspicion is that glyphosate was in the water supply, and the and glyphosate stripped the lead off of the lead pipes to make it be much higher concentrations of lead than it would have otherwise been.
I was thinking
because
about
glyphosate is able to take lead off of pipes.
Just talking with you on this April 13th morning, Dr. Seneff, the number, the millions of people that don't eat organic, which is probably most, right? 90% of people, 80, I don't know, whatever the number is. God love them. I don't know how they're even, no wonder, you know, antacids and the number almost the number one thing, you know, over-the-counter drug, you know, on the market. I mean, no wonder they have stomach problems. My God.
Right. I know. I agree. And of course, many other illnesses, too. That's one thing that I've done through the years in collaborating with Nancy Swanson to look at trends over time in various diseases and looking specifically for diseases that are rising in prevalence in the population over time, exactly in step with the rise in glyphosate usage on crops. And there's a long list of diseases that match very, very well. Things like diabetes, obesity, autism,
Alzheimer's. Because it's all tied in with the gut, It's all tied in with the gut, right?
Yeah, well, it's tied in with the glyphosate, I feel very
confident. Yeah, the glyphosate gut.
They correlate. Glyphosate messes up the gut, messes up the liver. I mean, they've also seen recently there was a paper published that showed that glyphosate causes fatty liver disease, even at levels that are below regulatory limits. There was a study on rats that showed that it caused them to develop fatty liver disease. And there was also a study on humans that showed that people with fatty liver disease had glyphosate levels in their urine that were higher than the levels in people without the disease. And those with more extreme disease had higher levels than those with less extreme disease. So there's definitely a correlation at the individual level between glyphosate levels in the urine and the fatty liver disease, which is another epidemic that's going up in step with glyphosate. So we have all these diseases that are causing enormous healthcare costs, which is why this country spends more on healthcare than any other country in the world by far.
We do, yeah, a bunch, right? And, you know, so when were glyphosates first, as far as you know, introduced into the food supply? What year do we know?
Yeah, 1974 was when they got it approved. Got the patent, got it approved, and then started marketing it. And it really didn't go up that. It was much less then. It's like at least 15 times as much now is used as it was at the beginning, in the early days. And it's been going up dramatically over the past two decades. Starting with the GMO crops, actually, the late 1990s was when they figured out they could build, create these crops that were resistant. And then glyphosate became a wonderful herbicide. They really got enthusiastic about using glyphosate on those crops because they could just spray it from the airplane all over the crop and not worry about, keeping it away from the crop. They used to have to just selectively try to kill the weeds and not hit the crop, but now they could just spray it, without any.
What foods were glyphosates in early on, 70s and 80s?
Geez, I don't even know, really. It might have been those things like the fruits where they were controlling the weeds around the plant. You know, you have the tree and then they spray glyphosate on the weeds. I think they're doing that on the palm trees that they're using to make palm sugar. They're spraying glyphosate around the base of the tree to keep the weeds away.
Right.
So that probably means glyphosate's in palm sugar. I mean, I think glyphosate is a contaminant in all the sugars. The beet sugar, sugar beets are GMO Roundup Ready sugar. And cane sugar is sprayed, ripe cane is sprayed, sugar cane, right before harvest. It's one of the crops that's sprayed right before harvest.
I know that you live part-time in Hawaii, and there's a lot of sugar cane there. And do they spray from airplanes the glyphos?
Probably. I'm actually not close enough to know, but I suspect so. I know they have a serious problem with glyphosate in Hawaii.
Do they? Wasn't there some islands that, I guess Maui and a couple other islands kind of banned GMOs, right?
Mm-hmm. Well,
but not glyphosate.
Well, they've been fighting it, yes. They haven't managed to ban it. I don't think so. They did ban it in I don't know if it's over all the islands or just Kauai, but I have a house in Kauai, so I know it better. But recently, actually, within the last couple of years, they banned the use of glyphosate on the schoolyards. I mean, I sort of think that's a no-brainer, but they used to use it on the schoolyards. And in fact, you know, there was this lawsuit. You probably know about the lawsuit. Three lawsuits, actually, starting with this Dwayne Johnson, who whose job was to take care of the yards,
right.
The schoolyards, and he sprayed the glyphosate on the schoolyards. And he came to Hawaii, and I met him. He's a really, really nice guy. But he came to Kauai, and there's a group there who've been fighting, you know, the Monsantos and all the toxic chemicals, and they hosted him in a dinner event.
I want to put this up for a minute, but I want to turn you on. So this fellow came there, and you could actually you talked to him, and did he ever get the money?
I don't think so. I think he's still struggling with that. They keep on, you know, higher level courts and stuff. But he testified to the government, and that's why they decided to stop spraying glyphosate in the schoolyard. So that I really was appreciative that he did that for Kauai. And that's one thing that's happening at the local level. And in fact, Mexico, I'm so happy to hear
Mexico has decided
to phase it out
by
2024. That's just fantastic news to me. And in fact, our country, of course, is trying to pressure them to tell them that's an idiotic thing to do and why would you ever do that? And also our country's worried, our government's worried that Mexico is going to start saying they won't import our food because it's contaminated with glyphosate and they will lose a lot of business, you know, selling our food in Mexico. And I really hope that happens because I think it'll start to apply pressure that we have to, you know, money speaks, right? I mean, we're so unwilling to change. The government just seems to be unwilling to acknowledge that there's a problem with this.
Well, we can talk about that a little bit before you go and get a little insight on that with Dr. Stephanie Seneff, Patrick Timpone, 13 April. We are live here. If you care to join us, Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com is a way to ask a question. We have some more good ones coming in. We're going to talk about some interesting things regarding this injectable medical device in about an hour or so with Rosemary Friel. We've heard and read. Now, I don't know how true it is because these days you don't know what to believe. That Mr. Putin himself is actually not a big glypho guy and a GMO guy, that he doesn't want that stuff. Do you have any insights? Do you think it's true?
I think it's true. I mean, I've seen that evidence popping up here and there on the web, and I think it's probably true. Russia's pretty well positioned because they still have a lot of small family farms. And so they are it'll be much quicker for them to go back to the organic approach of organic methods. And he's really clamping down on GMO. I mean, he doesn't allow GMO crops to be introduced into Russia since 2015.
Yes.
And he's also getting to the point where he's going to get rid of all the GMOs that are there now. So I think he's really, really interested in going back to a more organic approach to agriculture. Yeah. And I really hope he does. And I wish him well. I mean, I think it'd be fantastic. He thinks Russia is going to be the major supplier of organic food worldwide.
Yeah.
He's predicting that. He's hoping that will happen.
I mean, I could, you know, if it wasn't so darn cold there, I could move there and A little colder. Okay, we got some more emails here for Dr. Seneff. Here's one. Monsanto lost all three patents on glyphosate. Many companies are manufacturing it. Chinese manufacturers, 30% of the world supply. Who are people suing nowadays? Interesting.
That's interesting. Yeah, Monsanto got taken over, you know, by Bayer. Bayer bought Monsanto, so they're no longer an independent company. And actually, the headache started once Bayer bought them. So I think the Monsanto lawyers knew how to keep, you know, keep the threats at bay, but the Bayer lawyers weren't quite as experienced at that. I'm guessing they were quite surprised that these people won these lawsuits. And I'm hoping that the lawsuits will actually, I'm looking at different ways in which the system could collapse. And one of them is things like Mexico banning it, because that really makes people wake
huge,
up.
Right.
And another one is these lawsuits, you know, and they become very publicized and people become aware they could get non-Hodgkin's lymphoma if they work with product. And then the other thing is that then the stores that sell glyphosate start to get worried, because I've heard that some of the stores have taken glyphosate off the shelf, herbicide off the shelves, because they're afraid of lawsuits to the store. Like if the store sells a product and then somebody gets sick and they come and then they sue the store. So these stores are getting nervous about carrying the product. And then, of course, the company itself.
Yeah. Excuse me, any of the big players like Home Depot or any, have you heard?
Yes, I think so. I'm forgetting which one, but it might have been Home Depot. And this was the work of Zen Honeycutt, too. Zen Honeycutt is a friend of mine. She's fantastic. She founded the organization called Moms Across America.
Yeah, we've had her on the show. Yeah,
She's really great. Yeah. And she's been trying hard to get the message out about glyphosate and eating organic.
There are still ongoing lots I've read, and you probably keep up with some of them, lawsuits, right? Are people?
Oh, there's thousands, tens of thousands, I think. It's incredible. Wow. They're trying to do a big class action lawsuit deal, you know, with
$10 billion.
Yes, and they were fussing with this deal, and I don't know the latest on it, because it never quite gets resolved. It looks like it's resolved and they're going to have to pay $10 billion, which is actually peanuts compared to what they should
be
pay.
Be nothing.
But the other thing is part of the condition was that they were going to have a committee be formed that would study glyphosate, and they would determine forever, you know, throughout the future, whether glyphosate is a carcinogen or not. So they were really hoping to stack the deck with that, get this group of people together who were all pro-industry, have them discover that glyphosate is not a carcinogen, and then declare victory. It's not a carcinogen, and we don't have to look anymore.
That's it.
Nobody can sue, you know? And I think they balked on that. The lawyers on the other side said no to that. That was too extreme. And so I think it's still pending, this class action lawsuit, which, you know, like 15,000. I've lost track of how many. The last time I looked, it was 15,000 people.
15,000 lawsuits?
15,000 in this class action lawsuit.
On the class action.
People with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, specifically just with that one disease. I'm hoping we'll get enough evidence that it causes autism that we'll start to get lawsuits on the basis of autism and glyphosate, because I really believe it's the primary factor.
Do you?
In the autism epidemic.
Maybe the whole aluminum mercury thing in these injections, it could have been a false flag too to keep the attention away from glyphos. It's possible, you know, these days.
Could be, but yeah. No, those are contributing as well, for sure.
In fact,
glyphosate's helping them. Glyphosate helps them get into the autistic brain in many ways. For one thing, it interferes with the detox of mercury. So the mercury doesn't get excreted. It builds up in the brain. And Alzheimer's, Chris Exley is an expert on aluminum, and he found high levels of aluminum in autistic brains post-mortem. When he found that, he became convinced that the vaccines were causing autism through the aluminum. And I think that's probably true, and I think glyphosate helps the aluminum get to the brain.
Interesting.
So that's a problem, too.
This is an email from Adam Bergstrom. He helps produce the show out in California. Very well-researched guy. And he said, glyphosates are used extensively on oranges and all citrus fruits.
There you go. I thought so, but I haven't, you know.
Oh, come on, man.
Oh, my.
Oh, my
really
God.
Sad.
I could see our listeners right now around the world. So they're going, okay, I'm going to go downstairs. Let's see what's not organic.
Exactly. We did that. We were sort of fussing with, you know, when we first discovered glyphosate, we said, oh, we got to start buying organic. So when we would replenish, we would buy a certified organic version.
Yeah.
But we still had stuff like cereal in our, you know, cabinet that wasn't organic. And then at one point, after a couple of months of this, we thought we could no longer eat that food. It was like toxic. We just pitched it all. We just went, oh, not organic, gone. And we just threw it all out and had a purge, which was quite fun, actually. You know, now everything's organic.
I mean, after writing this book and going, you know, for what, how many years of research? What, almost 20 years of research? There's no way you would eat anything but organic, right? I mean, come on.
Right. Yes.
Dr. Stephanie Seneff's book, Toxic Legacy, How the Weed Killer Glyphosate is Destroying Our Health and the Environment. Can you stick around a few more minutes? Do you have some time?
Okay.
Can you? Oh, cool. Stay right there. Yeah, we're going to, let's do a little commercial here and have some more fun. Lots of questions. Great to get people on the air that actually, you know what they're talking about. What a concept. Yeah, listen to this. This is cool. This is great. Previously, with the highly credentialed Dr. Thomas Levy, he argues because the literature shows that oxidation is the cause of disease.
But the whole point is the location, the concentration, the duration, the distribution of oxidized biomolecules determines 100% of all diseases. And so that's why I say oxidative stress doesn't cause disease, oxidation is disease.
Is disease.
If there's no oxidized biomolecules, you don't have a toxin. The toxic effect is oxidation of biomolecules. That's the entirety of it.
And by the grace of God, several months ago, George Wiseman said this about hydrogen.
Hydrogen is the world's best antioxidant by a long shot.
Hmm.
First of all, it's 700 times smaller than something like CoQ10, 400 times smaller than vitamin C, things like that. So it can literally go, the hydrogen molecule can literally go through everything in your body and go right into the very DNA and repair it.
So now it makes sense why George was able to say this back in August 2019 with such conviction.
The body accepts that gas and uses it to heal everything. It's like the fountain of youth. It's astonishing the amount of ailments. In fact, in scientific studies, and they have over 1,000 scientific studies now, they're showing that it either helps the body heal directly or indirectly from virtually every ailment that ails any water-based life form.
Okay, I'm sold. And I was able to get one a couple of months ago, thanks to your support. It's called the AquaCure Hydrogen Machine. Breathe the gas and bubble the water. There's a promo code ONERADIO for 10% discount. I think a great investment for you, knowing what we know now. On OneRadioNetwork.com. If you're on hold, I just saw a call came in on the 800 number. We'll get to you. Stay right there. That commercial is probably a year old, a year and a half. I don't know. I've had the hydrogen, been breathing the Brown's gas for, I don't know, 18 months now. Never felt better in my life. Now, I eat mostly organic. Well, I eat all organic food, actually, except for the orange juice, which is going to go out today. My God. Take care of myself. But I think this is really a very interesting, powerful technology. You can drink the water. I breathe the Brown's gas 2-3 hours every day. I'm working on projects downstairs. I have a 25-foot cannula. Do my rebounding yoga. Whatever. Work on my screenplay and my book, Breathing the Gas. And it's you can go to molecularhydrogeninstitute.com and look at all the peer-reviewed studies on they're using it all over the world. Lots in Japan. They're all over it in Japan and helping folks to actually recover from strokes more rapidly when they're breathing this hydrogen gas. Now, our machine is actually uses Brown's gas, which is a step up from hydrogen. It structures the water more interestingly, and it's more powerful than pure hydrogen that most machines are. So it's a Brown gas machine. I think you're going to really love it if you invest in it. There's a lifetime warranty. Lifetime. And George says you're going to live a long time if you breathe it. George looks like he's about 20, and I don't know, I think he's 60 revolutions, and he looks great. And also then a 1 year, no questions asked, money back guarantee. So you have a 10 months, and you say, man, this is not doing anything, I'm going to want my money back. He'll give you your money back. I don't know how many units or technology machines out there that will do something like that. But Georgia does, because he says we've had about two people give it back, and one person didn't use it, and the other person didn't use it right. Other than that, he said nobody's sent it back. So check it out. Use promo code ONERADIO, oneradionetwork.com. Promo code ONERADIO for the Hydrogen Browns Gas Machine.
We are listener-supported, One Radio Network.
We are talking with Dr. Stephanie Seneff. You can see here her book, Toxic Legacy, Why the Weed Killer Glyphosate is Destroying Our Health and Our Environment. It's going to come out July 1, but get on the list, get it, and then you'll have it, and then you won't forget, because then you won't forget. So it sounds like, so some of the other things you have in here, some of the chapters, before we take some, a couple more emails. Oh, this phone call too. Oh, they hung up. But if you'd like to call back, 888-663-6386. What are some of the other things you dig into in your book that we haven't touched on here today, Doc?
Well, I talk a lot about sulfur, sulfur metabolism, and sulfate in particular. I've really identified sulfate deficiency as a key driver behind many modern diseases. And I think it's tied to glyphosate's disrupting the sulfur system. And so that's a topic that I go into quite a bit. And that relates to autism as well, because I think autism is associated with a sulfate deficiency and mismanagement of sulfate in the body. They end up flushing sulfate through the urine, the autistic kids. They're wasting sulfate, even though it's deficient.
So let's see if we understand, what is the sulfate system doing, and do we get that with sulfur-rich foods like broccoli and stuff like that, you know, good sulfur foods?
And we I always encourage people to eat high sulfur diet.
High sulfur diet. So what happens when the sulfate system goes out to lunch? What goes on?
It's quite interesting in the gut, actually, and that's where the problems start. And so a lot of people have sulfur sensitivity. They can't eat foods that contain sulfur. And that's because their gut microbes are getting messed up by glyphosate. There's an enzyme, so sulfite, you know, there's sulfites in wine. People have sulfite sensitivity. They get a headache if they drink red wine. Sulfite is a very reactive molecule. And the gut microbes know how to clear it really fast if their enzymes are working properly. And they'll convert the sulfite to sulfate, oxidizing it, or they'll reduce it. And in reducing it, there's two ways they can go. They can turn it into an organic sulfur molecule like methionine. Methionine is a central sulfur-containing amino acid. And methionine can then be turned into cysteine and homocysteine and glutathione, all those good things. So methionine is produced in the gut by the gut microbes through this, what's called assimilatory sulfide reductase enzyme that gets disrupted by glyphosate. So instead, you get a buildup of bacteria that reduce sulfite to hydrogen sulfide gas, because the assimilatory sulfide reductase is not working. You have these other microbes that make hydrogen sulfide gas, and that gas causes, you know, bloating, but it also, the gas can move throughout your body. It's very tiny and it's a gas, so it can just, it doesn't need to even travel in the blood vessels or anything. It can just float through the body, go to the brain, and if too much hydrogen sulfide in your brain causes brain fog. It kind of causes your brain to go into like a semi-coma. So you get that kind of, a lot of people are suffering from brain fog. And they sort of can't think very well.
So
they've got hydrogen sulfide gas in their brain.
Interesting. There's so many people, you know, we've been promoting this pure sulfur, I don't know, 10 years, a long time now. And some people, and I know, I do one tablespoon twice a day, and I'm starting to do more. And people, first time I took it, I felt brighter, kind of like clearer, you know, so maybe that helps some kind of brain foggy thing, you know?
I think so, because if your brain, what I believe is if your brain has enough sulfate, Well, in fact, your whole body has to have enough sulfate. Sulfate is super important for maintaining what's called structured water. That's the gel. You know, the gel water.
Oh, the fourth phase. The fourth phase of water, yeah.
Exactly, yes. The fourth phase is created by sulfate. Sulfate attached to the extracellular surface. And for example, lining all the blood vessels, there's these sulfate anions that are helping to maintain that gelled water. And it's also called exclusion zone water.
Yes.
Because it excludes. So it becomes like pure crystalline water that keeps anything that's in the blood from affecting the endothelial wall. So if the blood vessel wall gets attacked by various things that are active, like blood sugar, for example, you know, it can attack the tissues and cause damage. But if you've got that gel layer, it's like a protective surface that keeps it safe.
Yeah.
So the blood vessels stay healthy that way because they have enough sulfate. And it's just clear to me that sulfate deficiency in the gut as well, because the mucins, sulfomucins, they are protecting the gut lining, you know. And so when the sulfate's deficient, all these barriers become broken, you know, and then you get all kinds of trouble.
That's what George says, who makes this hydrogen machine. That's what it makes, is the exclusion zone water. That's what it makes when it's Brown's gas and not just that's a hydrogen. Whoa. So, but now, but why would people not be able to handle high sulfur foods? What's going on?
Well, so sulfite is extremely reactive, and it'll cause tissue damage. And as I said, the enzymes, the microbes have these enzymes that get rid of it, but the enzymes are broken by glyphosate. And so sulfite becomes toxic, but the sulfite gets converted to hydrogen sulfide gas, which has its own set of issues. So both the sulfite and the hydrogen sulfide gas are problematic. And you, because you can't make enough sulfate, you get the sulfate deficiency as well. So you've got, again, makes sulfur toxic and deficient at the same time. It does the same thing with manganese and iron. It makes them both toxic and deficient, but different, you know, chemical reactions, but same concept. Because when it messes up the enzymes that the body has, and even the transport mechanisms that the body has, these reactive molecules that are crucial, you know, many of the enzymes critically depend upon sulfur, iron, and manganese to work properly. But they have to be delivered, you know, they have to be transported, and all of those mechanisms become disrupted by glyphosate.
So, if your book and all this is not an argument for not messing with Mother Nature, my goodness, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? What is?
I know what you're saying. I've been very careful to eat only natural things, and I won't even take drugs, because anything it's ironic that the drug industry wants to find something that's not natural so they can patent it.
Sure.
To use as a drug. And if it's not natural, it's not going to work well. So all the drugs, you know, are defective because they're not natural. I've really come to believe natural is so important.
Got to be. Here's an email for you. This is from Manny. Great name. I'm a father of a boy with autism. I've learned so much from Stephanie Seneff over the years. We'll definitely get the book just to support her. She has done so many free interviews, lectures that I've used as reference. It's the least I can do. Oh, two questions. Is there a lab that we can send product supplements to be tested for glyphosate? Let's do one at a time. That would probably be expensive, right?
It probably would be. I haven't done it myself. I do know, you know, organizations that have done it. You know,
sure.
They've got a setup somehow working with a lab, but I don't think it's one of those routine things you can just send it off somewhere and get the result.
I don't think so either.
There are labs that can test your urine for glyphosate, and I've actually done that where you.
Really?
They send you a kit, and then you freeze your urine, and then you ship it to them. It's kind of amazing.
Did you have any?
You do it all, without ever going. I did, actually. I was so shocked. I did.
Did you have a lot or medium?
It was on the low side, but it was there, and I was really angry about that because I had been eating certified organic. But, you know, it's in the air. It's in the water. I mean, it's just really hard to avoid. And it's in the organic food, unfortunately.
Some organic food, right? Some organic.
Sometimes it tests positive. Even like honey, for example, you can't tell the bees not to go there because there's glyphosate.
Yeah. Wow. Here's the second question. Can we expect the new gene-altering shots? Oh, I knew we were going to get there. COVID injection to have glyphosate as well? I have no idea.
Now, that's a really good question, and I'm wondering that myself. I don't know the answer, of course, but it's not impossible looking at how they're made. I guess the, I think that the messenger RNA vaccines would be unlikely to have it. There are vaccines that have tested positive for glyphosate. I think you know that, right?
I'm sorry?
They've actually found glyphosate. They found glyphosate in some of the vaccines, especially the MMR.
No, I didn't know that.
That's really serious. I think that could be a reason why the MMR vaccine is associated with autism, because
really?
There's glyphosate in it, which could really cause extra trouble there. But I don't think they'd be in the messenger RNA vaccines. It's possible the other ones, the ones that are based on DNA, because those are actually microbes grown in culture. And I always worry about cultures because they often give them nutrients that I think would be high in glyphosate.
How are they getting in there? Do we know what's up with that?
With the MMR, I think it's because they're growing the virus. It's a live virus vaccine.
Yes.
It's the live virus vaccines that are ending up with glyphosate. The ones with aluminum in them are not live virus because the aluminum would kill the virus.
That's right.
And they don't have glyphosate, so that's quite interesting. It shows up in the live virus vaccines, particularly MMR, and it's a measles virus that's grown on gelatin, which comes from collagen, which has all those glycines. So the collagen is, Anthony Samso found glyphosate in gelatin, in bone. He got a bone from the butcher, from Eiffel cow, and he found glyphosate in the bone. So it's in the gelatin, gelatin-based products. It's probably in those gel caps, you know, those animal-based gel caps.
Sure.
That's nothing to worry about. So you have to watch out because it's in a lot of places you wouldn't expect. It's in tampons, for example. They found glyphosate in tampons.
No.
Which I find very
come on.
Worrisome if you think about where tampons are used. So.
Yeah,
but so I don't know about these new vaccines.
We have no idea.
I think it would be great to have someone test them and see if it's there.
Well, there's a lot of people doing the research on these injectable things, and they don't sound good. I mean,
I don't intend to get it. Intend to get a vaccine.
No way. Oh, no way. Very, very challenging. My goodness. So before there's got to be ways that, now we've talked to a doc in Texas, his name will come to me, that he's been studying these kinds of things for a very long time. He's a good man. And he seems to think that glyphos are not sticking in the body as long as we originally thought. Do you think that's possible, that just our ongoing good food, water, exercise, sweating, whatever organic is washing? They must be. If we're getting these things, we'd all be dead. I mean, we'd all be sick, is what I'm saying. If we're not getting rid of them, if they're in the air and the water, we have to be getting rid of them ongoing, right?
Well, I think that when you eat a food that contains glyphosate, most of it goes through and goes out. I think most of it doesn't accumulate, but there's a small percentage of it, and I don't know what the number is. There's a small percentage that ends up in your tissues, and we know that because of Monsanto's own early studies. They did a study on bluegill sunfish where they exposed them to radio-labeled glyphosate so they could track the radio label. And then they looked at the tissues, and they found radio label in the tissues. And the amount of radio label was only about 20% of the radio label could be identified as being glyphosate. And then they decided to add enzymes that break down proteins into individual amino acids. And after they did that, they recovered 80% of the radio label as glyphosate. In other words, the glyphosate was hiding in the protein, so they didn't see it, but they could see the radio label. And once they split the protein apart into individual amino acids, then they could see the glycine and the glyphosate. And they said in the paper that perhaps it was incorporated into the protein, which is exactly what I've been saying. It's getting incorporated into our proteins. And when that happens, it sticks around for a long time. I think it's causing Alzheimer's by getting incorporated into amyloid beta.
What's
causing it to misfold.
What's a radio label?
Amyloid. So it's just you give it like a carbon, you give it a an atom that is an abnormal, not the standard version of that atom. It's an atom that actually releases radioactive signal that you can see.
Mm-hmm.
You make a version of glyphosate that has this radio. I think it's carbon, radio labeled carbon. I guess you could maybe radio label some other things too, but I think it's the carbon that gets radio labeled, and then they can trace it. They know exactly that carbon atom. They can track it.
Hmm. So much we don't know.
It's a technique they use to be able to see. Yeah.
There's so much we don't know because real deep dive into research and the gut and all that. I mean, it's just not done because there's no motives for people with billions of dollars.
Right. The research is so weak. Yeah. It's actually looking good lately, though. I've got papers coming at me left and right these days.
Really?
There's a lot of new papers coming out. I mean, there's one that's quite exciting, which it just came out. It looked at babies, girl babies, and looked at the distance. There's something called the anogenital distance, which is a measure of the genitalia that shows if it's short or long, and an indicator of whether you're female or male.
Yeah.
So they could actually see that these young girls had too long a distance, indicating a kind of male-like direction of the development of their genitals. And that was that is an indicator of excess exposure to testosterone during development in the uterus during pregnancy. So it showed that glyphosate caused this, because they looked at the glyphosate levels of the pregnant women. This was done on humans. Mid-pregnancy, they measured the glyphosate in their urine, and then they measured the length of this measure that they use when the child was born, and they showed there was a statistically significant correlation between the amount of glyphosate in the urine and the degree of maleness of the daughter. And this really matters, because that lengthening is associated with a condition called polycystic ovary syndrome, PCOS, which is a very common, like 20% of the women in the world have a problem with this syndrome, which is linked with irregular menstrual periods or even no menstrual periods at all. And of course, very big difficulties getting pregnant. So it's an infertility problem. It's the number one cause of female infertility. And it's associated with this, you can see it because of this metric, and it's connected to too much testosterone. Mm. So that women who make too much testosterone end up sort of male-like, and they lose their ability to have periods. Right. And that's also linked to autism. Both the women who have this condition have a higher rate of autism, and they produce offspring with a higher rate of autism. All of that ties together with the testosterone, which makes sense because glyphosate disrupts an enzyme called aromatase, which converts testosterone to estrogen. And it's part of the development during the development of the fetus. It's very tricky to get this aromatase, to get this estrogen in place, because it's going to trigger a whole different sequence of events the way things develop. You know, estrogen and testosterone play an important role in regulating the development of the reproductive system.
Well, if you'd want to get real spooky, you'd say, boy, there's a whole lot of people that want to thin out the population, but we won't go there.
I know. It's really looking that way.
It does, doesn't it? I know. You don't even want to think about that. Right? It's like lunatics are running the asylum. You know, what do you think, after all these years, before we go, what it would take to be able to have a legitimate, real look, studies in Congress, making presentations with all you people? I mean, is it so swampy with Big Pharma and Monsanto that it's just something that probably is not going to, I mean, what do you think?
Oh, it's so hard. I mean, I've gotten really discouraged with the government. I've done a number of presentations within different states, like Massachusetts and Pennsylvania and Hawaii. You know, I've gone and presented material to legislators. And we had a whole group of 10 people who actually, on their own nickel, flew to Washington, D.C., met with the EPA, members of the EPA, presented our slides on glyphosate. And it was a very discouraging experience, because the EPA, first of all, they made us wait for a long time. They weren't available. And then when they were finally available, they started talking to us and wasting more time just kind of saying stuff that was completely useless. Finally, they gave us the floor, and then we had to rush through our slides. And while we were presenting, they weren't paying attention. Yeah. They didn't ask any questions. I mean, it was so discouraging. It was just like, we just have to go through this exercise with these people because they bothered to come. But we're not going to it's not going to have any impact. We're not going to hear what they're saying. It was so frustrating. That really turned me off to the, that's when I decided I wasn't going to do anything more with the U.S. government. I'm just going to work all around them until they recognize that their country's falling apart because people are so sick.
Yeah.
And the individuals have to individually decide to eat certified organic. That's how we're going to win.
That's
it. If we don't eat the food, they won't make it.
That's it.
And the government can do whatever it wants. We don't need the government to tell us not to eat this stuff. You know,
right.
We don't need them to tell us that.
I wonder, do we have any way of knowing if Mexico is going to accept imported foods with glyphosate?
I'm certainly hoping they won't. I'm hoping they'll realize that our food is toxic as well as our GMOs, because they're, you know, Mexico is really quite advanced compared to the United States in terms of actually being willing
and
to worry about things.
Yeah.
You
think of them as a third world kind of country place, but they're not even doing the vaccine passports because the head dudes know that it's crazy, you know.
So it's quite remarkable. I'm actually thinking of maybe moving.
I'm thinking
to Mexico
too. I mean, it's not far from Texas. It's not far from Texas.
Yes, I think so.
Some beautiful and wonderful people. Wonderful people too. I mean, just sweet people. You know, maybe it's an option, and it's warm. So hey,
it is. I think sort of the most attractive option in terms of not having to move too far away from.
Yeah. Right.
U.S. but get outside this country because it's just not clear to me. We need a revolution here, actually.
Boy, fix things. You know, it's just it's bonkers, and we're going to do a show tomorrow of who's pulling Joe Biden's strings, and you know this is not a Trump Biden thing, but there's some really spooky things going on, as you know, in this right now. We may never have another fair election in this country. I mean, it's terrible. I don't know. What are we going to have to do? Storm the castle on him? Or what's the deal? I mean,
I know. It's an exciting time to be alive. I'm like living inside of a nightmare.
Well, God love you. I just really appreciate your work. And thanks so much. Let's put your slide up again. So this is, here's the book, Toxic Legacy, How the Weed Killer Glyphosate is Destroying Our Health and Our Environment. Stephanie Seneff, PhD in MIT, and it's going to be out, March, May, a couple months, right? But you can pre-order now. Mm-hmm. Get it. I'm going to get it. So I'm wondering, if you don't have to answer this if you don't want, but most universities are pretty swampy, you know. Most universities have so much government money going in there, they have studies done that you can prove anything, right? I don't care what it is.
Right.
You know? How do you get away? I mean, you know, they leave you alone, huh?
I know.
MIT? We shouldn't say it out loud.
They have. I know. I have worried about them coming at me, but they have not. They've been very good. My boss is very supportive. She feeds her family organic. She understands that glyphosate
is toxic.
That's
great.
And
good for you.
No one's come at me from MIT, and I've gotten a really good source of funding from a company in Taiwan. It's a computer company in Taiwan. Very, very honorable. They make Mac computers, for example.
Really?
It's called Quanta Computers. That's my funding. That's been my source of funding for a long time, even well before I got into this space. Yes. So they were funding me to develop online games to help a person learn a second language, like to have an English-speaking person learn Chinese.
I'd like to do that.
It's completely different. Yeah, it was fun, actually, and I really enjoyed it, and I felt good about that. I felt it was really a nice idea to have, to be able to have fun playing a game and learning a language at the same time. So I was very much involved with that back then. And then when I got interested in glyphosate, I just phased it out and switched over to this. And they were okay with that. I just basically announced to them, well, now I'm going to do this. And they said, fine.
That's great.
So they've been wonderful. They really support
my work. Name of the company? Maybe we can support them a little bit. What's their name?
Quanta Computers.
Quantum Computers?
Quanta. Q-A-N-T-A. Quanta Computers.
Oh, Quanta Computers. Never heard of them. Mm-hmm. Huh.
Yeah. Well, they make Macs.
Oh, they make Macs. Well.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Apple's not so spooky after all. I may keep mine, even though.
they do a lot of other things too, but that's just one of the things.
I was going to ditch it because they're so globalist. But Wow, did you ever do one of the games? Can we get one of those? I mean, and learn Russian, Russian or Spanish?
Yeah, well, it's all died now. I mean, I had all the software. We had some fun games. You could sort of play like a card game, and you'd have these cards with pictures of dogs and cats, and then you would have to verbally, you know, say, pick up the dog and put it over there. And then you would play like a kind of a gin rummy game. And you could learn numbers and learn names of things, and you could create your cards to have different, like say a set of furniture or a set of different kinds of trees, whatever vocabulary you were interested in learning. You put the picture on the card and play the game that way. So that was one of the games we were developing.
Tu parles espagnol?
Right. Yeah.
Do you speak Spanish?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't. No. Oh,
obviously, you don't, because you didn't understand.
No, no parlo espanol.
You don't, because you didn't answer me. Okay. But believe me, I tell you, I know quite a bit of Spanish and understand a lot because I work with them in my company, and it's a whole lot easier than Russian because I've been looking at studying Russian and it's a beautiful
Chinese
language.
Really,
it's beautiful, but you know.
Yes, when you have a different set of characters, and Chinese, of course, has that whole character-based system, and I tried to learn Chinese myself. Part of my interest in building the game was to teach myself Chinese, and it didn't go very well.
It didn't go very well.
I learned a few characters, but I was really, really, really hard. I decided it's not possible that anybody can read that language, even though, of course, millions of people do, hundreds of millions.
You need way too much coffee to do that. You know, it would kill you before you would learn it. Well, Dr. Seneff, thanks so much. It's an honor. We love you, and we love your work, and let us know how we can help. Okay, and you know, shoot me an email around July 1st. We should do a quick little blurb, but just to say, hey, the book is out there. Do a little recap, half an hour or so, or whatever, and
that'd be great.
To help you sell the book, because people should get this. A lot of good stuff.
Great. Well, thank you. That would be great. That would be perfect.
All right, my dear. Thanks a lot.
All
you
right.
Take care.
Good to see you.
Aloha.
Bye.
Aloha.
Aloha, right? Can't say that.
Yeah. She lives in Hawaii half the year. Boy, if Hawaii went so bonkers by, I'd be moving there, but they are just... the socialists are unbelievable. Well, we have our work cut out for us here on planet Earth these days, don't we? Yes, we do. But we're doing fine, and we have lots of tools to help us make it. And hey, I'm doing great, and I've had my body quite a few years, and every now and then I'm having a midlife crisis because 145 is a good one, but we're doing fine because we really understand a lot of the real causes of disease. And I think this whole glyphosate thing and chemicals plays in very nicely to Dr. Thomas Cowan's and Kaufman's and Professor Lanka's and Carrie Maddie, who's going to be here next week, Amanda Vollmer, Melissa Sell, Paul Lando. On and on and on and on and on. The hits just keep on coming of people that say, show me the virus. Because it's not there. And they're arguing, and as I say, plays into what Dr. Seneff's work is doing, is that if we can let this whole virus thing go, this idea of the germ theory, which never has been proven true, never, then we can start really talking about why people are getting sick, which is toxins, poisons, chemicals, things that are oxidating the biomolecules. That's one of the first things it does, Thomas Levy. And it just starts rolling from there. That's what poisons do. That's what chemicals do. That's what mercury. That's what it does. That's what it does. Then we can really start talking about it and get away from all these antibiotics and of this flu and all this nonsense. It's just a waste of time. In my opinion. Okay, we're going to see you in about, 20 minutes or so. No orange juice again until I go back and get some organic oranges. That's it. Oh, well, it was fun for a couple months. I've been drinking non-organic orange juice. But my tummy's good, so somehow it's getting rid of it. I was going to mention one other thing. Oh, some of you are having issues ordering sulfur. We're trying to get to the bottom of it, but please email me if you have. So far, we think it's just on the Safari Mac thing, but not sure. Ruben's working on it. We don't know what's happening, but if we're getting emails about it, and that means that many of you cannot order sulfur and just, you know, lose interest and get frustrated, and I understand that. But if you can't order for some reason, email me, Patrick@OneRadioNetwork, and Ruben will work with you. We'll try to figure out what's going on. There's some kind of a whoop-de-doop going on, but we'll figure it out. So let me know if you're having an issue. Okay, we'll see you in about 20 minutes, and goodness knows where we're going to go. Tomorrow, Susan Bradford, great researcher. We had her on a month ago, and she's going to talk about who is pulling Joe Biden's strings. And that'll be tomorrow at 10 o'clock. I love you all very much. Thanks for your support, your donations and everything. Just amazing. Thank you. We appreciate it. And may the blessings be.
We are listener supported. One Radio Network.